your chest is constricted. It's like you're laying down with a weight on top of you and you can't move. And it may come on with no trigger. For me, I've had a couple come on at lunch while I was eating with friends, and I didn't know that it was happening until I couldn't respond to like people talking directly to me. And I don't always know how to get out of it and how to fix it, which is frustrating.
That's Mackenzie Calloway, a graduate student in biomedical engineering at the University of Minnesota, describing the effects, for her, of a panic attack. Calloway is not alone in dealing with anxiety and other forms of mental distress. Far from it. According to the latest College Student Health Survey in 2018, unmanaged stress was reported by 41.5% of University of Minnesota Twin Cities students, up dramatically from the 2010 rate of 26.8%. Those statistics are certainly alarming, and the ramifications are significant. Students who experience unmanaged stress have much higher rates of being diagnosed with mental illness, increased rates of high-risk drinking and marijuana use, and more difficulties with sleep. And this is happening everywhere, not just at the U of M, to the point it's been deemed a nationwide student mental health crisis. Students, faculty, staff, and the administration of the university are actively responding to the need for increased mental health services. And they have a leader in President Joan Gable, who has made addressing student mental health one of her very top priorities.
This is something we need to talk about. It's something we need to act on. And we know that the more we talk about it and the more we plan in our action, the less stigma is associated with the conversation and the more capacity we have to be allies or part of the solution. And we commit to students that when they come to us, that we will do our very best to make them successful in every way possible. And their well-being is cornerstone to that. It's the foundation upon which everything else happens.
Welcome to the podcast, Top of Mind, Promoting Mental Health at the University of Minnesota. I'm Rick Moore reporting. In this episode, we'll take a broad look at some trends and some factors affecting student mental health at the U of M. We'll also talk to two leaders at Boynton Health on the Twin Cities campus, as well as two students who have experienced mental health issues and are actively working to improve services for their fellow U of M students.
We've seen an increase in the people that are comfortable with seeking out care.
Dave Golden is the Director of Public Health and Communication at Boynton Health.
Which has been kind of the big strategy out there when it comes to mental illness, has been reducing stigma and getting people to care.
He started at the University of Minnesota in 1984 at the Division of Epidemiology in the School of Public Health and moved to Boynton in 1999. So he has 3.5 decades of looking at health holistically.
Is some stigma still out there? I would say certainly there is, but I would say our student population are also friendlier to getting that diagnosis as well.
Golden also talks about that key increase for students in unmanaged stress.
That percentage has really shot up in the past 5 years. The percentage of students where their level of perceived stress exceeds their ability to manage it.
Just the number of students that are struggling with these kinds of issues and the intensity around those issues, that does seem to have changed over time.
That's Matt Hansen, the assistant director of the Boynton Mental Health Clinic. He's been a counselor at the University of Minnesota for over 20 years, the last 4 at Boynton Health, after serving for 18 years in student counseling services.
Acuity, I mean, we use that word sometimes, urgency, something like that, around some of these issues that we have been seeing for a long time. There's just more of them, and they tend to be a little bit sharper when they're presented to us.
Hansen says it can be hard to quantify the increases in mental health concerns, given that more students are now comfortable talking about them and seeking help. But he has noticed changes.
We do think that a lot of students that might not have been able to make it to college in previous generations are now coming to college or university because they've been receiving care before they've gotten here. They've been receiving treatment before they've gotten here. So they have been addressing some of the challenges that we see on campus but at earlier and earlier ages. Multiple reasons that might be at play here. You know, we think some of them are very macro level explanations, and then they get here, and then things may be amplified, and so we're confronted with how to do that the best that we can as a university community.
Hansen says there are a host of factors affecting student mental health, including family genetic history, adverse childhood experiences like food insecurity, abuse, family chemical dependency and incarceration, and other stressors, including or amplified by social media. And he says parenting practices have changed.
Students are being raised differently than they have in previous years, and we're still trying to unpack what that difference might mean. I do think there is a culture of competition and perfectionism. There's not just one population of individuals. Being stressed out and being in a high achieving culture and expecting perfection is one pocket, especially students from marginalized populations or different ethnic backgrounds that might still be very reluctant to seek out help at all. And so there's some disparities along those lines too.
I got my first mental illness diagnosis when I was in high school, and mental illness had been a part of my family before that.
Leslie Kent is a senior at the University of Minnesota, majoring in microbiology at the College of Biological Sciences. For years now, predating her time at college, she's struggled with a host of mental health conditions, including depression, anxiety, and panic attacks.
But it wasn't something we really talked about. I wasn't really aware of it until high school, and things started to get really difficult, and we sort of had to talk about it because things were pretty bad. And I didn't really have anybody in my life that served as a role model in that. The stigma was big, and I didn't really want to tell my teachers or my coaches, and so I kind of learned to keep it to myself. And so when I came to the U, I was really excited. I had this new space, this new environment. And I had a chance to restart, and I was able to survive off of that for a few semesters. And then things really started to go downhill. And eventually I started crashing and received my diagnosis officially then. And at that point, it was an anxiety disorder, and I have bipolar runs in my family as well. With anxiety, it's a constant stream of thoughts of you have to go, you have to work harder, you have to do better, you have to do all these things. So with depression, it's more like, why even try? Not reaching like the people around you are reaching. Panic attacks are a whole nother world. Those take over everything. And they were something that I really became adjusted to having in my life. This was something that was relevant starting in high school. And it starts off with the high anxiety symptoms, the racing thoughts and the rapid heart rate. And it slowly turns into an inability to move and shaking and crying. And it is really debilitating. There's nothing that I can do. Sometimes I look up, it's been 10 minutes, sometimes it's been an hour. And after that, I'm just exhausted. And that is pretty much it for the day. And I have to lay down and go to sleep. And it took a long time for me to learn that that is not something that I should just be taking in stride. And it took a couple of years for me to finally go to the Disability Resource Center and get an accommodations letter. For a while there, I would just turn things in late because I physically wasn't able to do it.
Kent has continued to receive treatments while at the same time helping other students. She's co-chair of the Student Health Advisory Committee, or SHAC, which advises Boynton on ways to improve the health of the university community and also helps to develop the student services fee requests. Kent has bravely bared her challenges publicly already. In September 2019, she was on a panel to discuss student mental health as part of President Gabel's inauguration week. She's also a peer advisor. Ironically, she says, much of her peer counseling work occurred before she even got help for herself.
Some of the things are related to school and some of them aren't. Some of them are related to the economy and to the growing cost of living and to the growing cost of education.
Calloway, who spoke at the beginning of this podcast, is also a member of SHAC and a current co-chair. Her perspective is shaped by being a grad student and by seeing other grad students facing entirely different challenges, as well as an uncertain economy and future.
It is hard to not get bogged down by the competition. And it's impossible to have friends that you're also supposed to be directly competing against. Professional success is only one piece of my success as a person, but I know that my quality of life and mental health has been better. There's a couple more things I was thinking about. One is the diversity and equity piece. And I think it is a huge stressor still for students who can't see someone in these leadership roles that they identify with. There are still very few female faculty, especially in engineering. There are almost no faculty from the LGBTQ community, especially trans folks. There are very few faculty of color.
Both Kent and Calloway, it should be noted, suggested that the figure of 41% of students dealing with unmanaged stress is probably low based on their interactions with peers.
So much of our health has really nothing to do with healthcare.
Golden talks about the many social determinants influencing student mental health.
Income stability, housing stability, food stability. All those things really contribute to my mental health. The bigger picture is get people through school, because that education is a huge determinant of health going into the future. Here, the food pantry has really filled in a great gap. Just the existence of help helps reduce the stress associated with food insecurity. Whether they access the service or not, just knowing that it's there, they're reporting it helps them. The other area we think is really important is housing insecurity. Roughly 40% of our students have indicated some level of housing insecurity. Right now, the housing around the university is some of the most expensive in Minneapolis. It's extremely expensive to live near campus.
Calloway confirms that the economic hardships facing some students are very real.
We're starting to see this trend of students who want an education have to couch surf or are homeless. I can't imagine being successful living in my car as a college student. That's not safe. It's not healthy.
Hansen says the U has undertaken numerous steps in recent years to promote wellness and offers more mental health counseling and services for students who need it.
There's been some creative energy around the Provost Committee for Student Mental Health. That's been a really strong voice over the years. That's a committee that's been around for, 15 years or so. It has ongoing conversations about what the campus can do to change culture.
As part of that, there has been an increase in training for faculty, and it also gave birth to the mentalhealth.umn.edu website. Also new is the Mental Health Advocates Program, an expanding service that taps advisors and point people from various departments and units to serve as consultants to colleagues and advocate to peers around mental health concerns. And the university has adopted the Let's Talk program, administered through Student Counseling Services, which gets out into the community and meets students where they're at.
So we're doing things that I feel good about. We just launched last fall, for example, a solution-focused therapy model where students can be seen for 3 weekly appointments regarding a short-term issue. So we're trying to give a kind of an appropriate dose response to where students are and what their presenting concerns might be. So it's not a one-size-fits-all model.
Golden says there's also a concerted effort to help students deal with everyday stressors and some of the habits that might contribute to them before they become unmanageable.
If we wanted to reduce the risk for cardiovascular disease, there's a pretty clear roadmap in terms of what I'm supposed to do. Exercise, don't smoke, gut nutrition. We don't have that same kind of roadmap for mental illness. because the strategy has been to drive people to care. Can we prevent these symptoms from even occurring? And one of those is unmanaged stress. And so there's a group called De-Stress, and they have basically stress checkups where they students can sign up. They fill out like a scoring card kind of in terms of, you know, what areas are stressful for them. They meet with another student that's been trained in this area, and they do a stress checkup. We've been doing them now, you know, online instead of in person during the COVID outbreak as well. And there's some real straightforward guidance that they can give as well, like sleep is a big one. We've seen numbers going the wrong direction in our survey in terms of the percentage of nights in a week they get adequate sleep.
As a high-achieving and very active undergraduate student, Leslie Kent has learned how to consciously focus on her own wellness, even if that has an effect on her coursework.
As I've gone to therapy and started doing medication management and started prioritizing my health, I've watched my grades drop a little bit, and that's been really difficult for me. Because I know that I'm capable of earning higher grades, but I know that to earn those higher grades, I would have to be prioritizing school over my health, and that's something that I'm not willing to do anymore. And so in a way, I'm actually proud of the fact that my GPA has dropped a little bit, because I know that that's a consequence of me taking the time and the energy to prioritize my mental health, my physical health. That's a piece I struggled with a lot, and it's part of the reason it took me so long to access resources, because I was doing just fine. I was earning the grades that I wanted to be earning. I was involved in things. I had a campus job. I was making ends meet. And so, especially knowing how high the demand is, and there's a misconception that there's still a waiting list at Boynton, and there's not. And that perception is really real. And for students who are still achieving as well as they should be on paper and who are still able to show up to class most of the time, the thought of going in and taking away that resource from somebody who might need it more is a really compelling reason to not go seek help until you feel like you absolutely need it.
Golden agrees that the university has worked especially hard, devoted a lot of resources to keep up with the demand for mental health counselors.
We get a lot of positive feedback for a lot of those programs that are out there, that students appreciate them. But for a lot of students too, even the care that they receive from our clinical staff is as well as appreciated.
We've got a tremendous staff. You know, these are really committed individuals who care just deeply about the mental health of their student clients and patients. And so I see that, and that always gives me just a sense of hope or optimism or just a certainty that we can do this. I feel good about the students. I mean, students are, you know, endlessly advocating for each other. And even if it comes across sometimes as being a little pointed, I don't mind that. I mean, I think that shows a lot of passion and a lot of investment, and I have no issue with that at all. So I appreciate the extent of the ideas that seem to always come from students.
Both Kent and Calloway suggest there's still more work that remains to be done, whether it's getting faculty in all colleges aware of and attuned to student mental health concerns, or in streamlining some services. But both are excited about the steps the University of Minnesota is taking, and excited that the issue is such a high priority for President Gable.
Obviously, at the university level, I think President Gable is doing a fantastic job with drawing attention to this and making it more normal to talk about mental health. I'm very excited to see how things at this university will go under her guidance over the next few years. It's great to have a spotlight on that.
In future episodes of Top of Mind, we'll hear from more students, including about how they've coped with the COVID-19 pandemic, learn what some colleges and units are doing to nourish student mental health, and hear about other services at the U of M, including the very popular PAUSE program. We hope you'll tune in. This is a production of University Relations at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities.